Hey Beeps, it's me, Christine, and I want to share with you a game-changing product that has improved my sleep and daily health. So let's dive in. You all know through my journey, I have struggled with sleep, being afraid of it, not getting quality sleep, and not being able to regulate my temperature throughout the night. I definitely learned the hard way, but sleep matters big time. It's when your muscles repair, your brain detoxes, and your body can work on cellular renewal. We just can't afford to miss out on an adequate amount of high-quality sleep, which is kind of hard when you have a rare disease. There's not much that I control in this real life, but one of the easiest and most effective ways to get better sleep every single night is through temperature regulation. Studies actually prove cooler temperatures lead to a deeper, more restful sleep, and that insomniacs actually lack this natural drop in core body temperature, which is what keeps them up at night. Personally, I run hot. This means that even if my room is super cold, I wake up in a pool of sweat, uncomfortable, changing my clothes several times throughout the night. It's frustrating for obvious reasons, and this is why I was so relieved to discover this transformative product from Chili. The Cube from Chili Sleep is a system that fits right over the top of your mattress and uses water to control the temperature of your bed, which helps lower your internal temperature and triggers deeper, relaxing sleep. Since water has 30 times more thermal conductivity than air, these systems are a lot more effective than just cranking up the AC. I mean, I keep my house at 65, so it has to be true. Ever since I started using the Cube system, I've noticed I fall asleep a lot faster, sleep deeper, and wake up feeling fully rested. Now, my wife is not a polar bear like me and likes to sleep a little bit warmer. So I love that we can each have our own temperatures on either side of the bed. Chili products can range between 55 and 115 degrees. Right now, Chili is offering my audience a really great deal. When you go to chilisleep.com/findyourrare20, you get 20% off the Cube All Sleep Systems with Find Your Rare 20. Sleep is something we could all use more of, and we can all take small steps towards getting better sleep to improve our life in big ways. I hope you'll check out the Chili Sleep System and see why I love their product so much.
Welcome to the Because We're Strong podcast, where we talk all things rare disease and chronic illness and how to navigate a rare life. Together, we're sitting down every week to get your stories and insight on how you navigate this rare life. You can expect everything real and raw in the hopes that your story, along with ours, helps another person who is dealing with a similar rare struggle. So grab your favorite drink, a comfy blanket, and buckle in, because rare disease isn't for the faint of heart. Hey peeps, by now you know that Christine and I are trying to unite as many rare disease and chronic illness families as we possibly can. Our goal is to find people who not only know what this life is like, but also want to change it. We came across Taylor on Instagram and immediately knew we wanted to bring her onto the podcast. Taylor Kane is a 22-year-old rare disease advocate and the founder of Remember the Girls, an organization dedicated to women with X-linked disorders. Taylor is passionate about fighting gender bias in healthcare, especially for women with rare conditions. Before we bring her on, I just need to acknowledge the fact that this 22-year-old seriously has her shit together.
Truth.
I'm your host, Teresa.
And I'm Christine. So let's dive in. Taylor, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
I got to admit, I didn't get a chance to get super in-depth with your story because I was so impressed with the fact that you're 22 and have your own organization. That's seriously amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, I started it in 2017, so my freshman year of college. My mom runs her own nonprofit for ALD awareness, which is the disease that my dad had that I'm a carrier of. So she was a lot of help in the beginning, getting my organization established and filing all the paperwork. So I couldn't have done it without her.
So that's awesome. So I would love you to tell our listeners a little bit about that. So your dad has ALD, you said?
He had. He passed away in 2003, 2 years after his diagnosis.
And what is that exactly?
So ALD, or adrenoleukodystrophy, is a rare genetic neurological condition. Basically, it destroys the white matter in the brain. And so there are a few different forms of the disease. There's like childhood onset, like later onset form. So my dad, of course, had the later onset form of the disease. And there's really no effective treatment or cure, especially if the disease is caught later, like it was in my dad's case. So he quickly, after he was diagnosed through an MRI, lost the ability to walk, talk, swallow. He developed early onset dementia, and he went into a vegetative state really quickly. And then he passed away in 2003 when I was in kindergarten. The disease is carried on the X chromosome. So at the time of his diagnosis, my family was told that my dad would have passed his X chromosome to me, which made me an obligate carrier of the disease.
So in terms of you having children, is there like a certain person, is it like one of those things that's a 50-50, or would you automatically pass that on?
Yeah, it's a 50-50. So if I had a boy, there'd be a 50% chance he would have ALD. And then if I had a girl, there would be a 50% chance that she was a carrier, like myself. And I've always known that if and when I do have kids one day, that I'll do in vitro fertilization with pre-implantation genetic testing, which is a mouthful, but IVF with PGT. And basically to just ensure that I don't pass the condition down and that it stops with me. Because I think, you know, watching my dad suffer like he did, I just always knew in my mind that I wanted to do what I could to like stop the disease from, you know, continuing down my family line. And, you know, obviously my brother doesn't have the condition because fathers can't pass it to their sons. So within my immediate family, you know, now I'm the only one who has the gene. So I definitely want to stop it in its tracks. I do have some cousins, and I also have a half sister who are also carriers. My dad was the first in his family like to be diagnosed, but then it turned out that, well, he had an identical twin brother. So of course he also had the condition, and then he had another brother who had a less severe version. And then his sister was also a carrier. So it turns out that, their mom or my grandma was the carrier, and she passed it down to all four of them. So I have few cousins who are carriers also. But yeah, in my immediate family now, just me. So I definitely want to stop the disease from continuing down the family line.
So what eventually, like with your father, what eventually led him to start getting tested or trying to figure out what was going on with him? Like, what were the first signs of it?
Yeah. So it's kind of a weird story. So a few years prior, he was diagnosed, like he always had walking difficulties throughout his life, and they thought he was just clumsy. And then when he was like in his 40s, he was diagnosed with, and I cannot say this word for some reason, so I'm just going to use the acronym, AMN, which is a version of ALD that doesn't include the cerebral or the brain involvement. And so he was diagnosed with that. Don't really exactly know how they landed on that. A lot of times, like ALD or AMN can be misdiagnosed as like MS or other conditions that cause like loss of motor functioning. But he was diagnosed with that. But this was the early like 2000s, and there wasn't a lot known about AMN and its relation to ALD. So today, it's really well known that for a lot of men who are diagnosed with AMN, it eventually progresses into ALD and has brain involvement, which causes more loss of functioning and also that like early onset dementia. But at the time, early 2000s, it wasn't really known. So when my dad started experiencing behavioral changes and just started acting different, none of his doctors, like it didn't really raise an alarm because they didn't think that, you know, AMN could become ALD. And so him and my mom actually went to a marriage counselor to try to deal with some issues my dad was having. And then the marriage counselor suggested he get an MRI of his brain. And that's what showed the white matter deterioration. But yeah, it was all really shocking because it's crazy, like, knowing what we know now about ALD and AMN, but back then, like, just thinking how little was known about, you know, the disease because it's rare. And of course, there's only a few people, like, in the world researching the condition. But yeah, it was the marriage counselor who ended up getting my dad the diagnosis. So
it's always so crazy, like, how in this community, the way we are diagnosed or the way these things come about never seems to be, like, in a, like, traditional sense, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it does seem, I think in the rare disease community, obviously, you know, there's the statistic of, I forget off the top of my head, I think it's 7 years is the average to get a diagnosis.
Yeah, it is.
But I think it's, like, all across the board, you know, like, my dad luckily was a lot, you know, on the quicker spectrum, but other people, it's, like, takes decades. And yeah, there's no one, like, clear cut path at all in rare disease or genetic diseases. Like, I think, like, we all have a story of getting the diagnosis. Yeah, I totally agree with you.
In some, like, weird way. I would love to hear your thoughts on, like, the gender bias in healthcare, because all of us here, right, in this conversation are women. But, you know, X-linked disorders, like, clearly affected your dad. Can you, like, tell us a little bit about your experience with that?
For sure. So I mentioned that when my dad was diagnosed in 2001, the doctors told my family that I was an obligate carrier of the disease. And as this was, like, 20 years ago, very little was known about carriers of adrenal leukodystrophy. You know, basically, they just said to my mom, like, she'll have a 50% chance of passing it on, but other than that, you don't need to worry about her. And growing up, I always knew that I was a carrier. I knew that, you know, from a young age, I remember saying, like, oh, I'm not going to have babies the normal way because of ALD. Like, I just have, you know, known about my carrier status for as long as I can remember. But once I started, you know, attending some ALD conferences, which was prompted by my mom, like, in early high school, you know, it started to, I don't really know exactly. Like, I think I knew a little bit that ALD carriers could develop symptoms just through my mom telling me and doing my own personal research. But it wasn't really until I started going to ALD conferences and saw how many women carriers were getting, like, having symptoms. A lot of them were in wheelchairs, walkers, like, clearly had walking difficulties. And it was kind of confusing for me at first because I was under the belief that it was really rare for carriers of X-linked diseases or ALD to get symptoms. Like, I was always told, oh, you're just a carrier. Like, you're really lucky. You won't have to worry about it. You won't have to suffer. So I was really confused because, you know, I was told this one thing my whole life, that I was just a carrier. And it was clear that, you know, there was a lot of women who were experiencing symptoms of ALD and those weren't really getting acknowledged. So I started becoming more passionate about just carrier issues within the ALD community. And I also want to point out, I use the term carrier just for, I guess, like, just because that's what most people do consider us as, in the, like, general rare disease and healthcare community. But in the ALD community, we actually don't really use the term carrier anymore. We just say female with ALD. So I'm using the carrier term very loosely just because it's, like, highly stigmatized. But anyway, I started becoming more involved in, you know, my carrier status and wanting to learn more and actually learn what it meant for me and my future. And I just started noticing that so many women in the community were getting brushed off and, you know, there wasn't a lot of research on our symptoms and carriers weren't really included in any clinical trials. It started really frustrating me because, you know, obviously, as long as this disease has been around, women carriers have experienced symptoms, but they just weren't getting any attention paid to them. And then just through becoming more involved in the ALD community and eventually the rare disease community, I learned that there was all these other X-linked conditions like Duchenne muscular dystrophy, for example, where females were thought to be just carriers, but actually many of them experienced symptoms of the disease. And like ALD, those symptoms really weren't getting that acknowledged. And I think this really ties into the gender bias in healthcare, just because, you know, women historically have always been assumed to, you know, be faking their symptoms or just doctors will chalk their, exaggerating, or doctors will like chalk their symptoms up to just anxiety or being like a nervous mother or being like a stressed out woman, you know, all these various things. And on top of that, you know, women have also historically been excluded from so much research. Like in the 70s, the FDA banned women of like child rearing age from being in any phase one clinical trials. Like this literally lasted until the 90s. And to think that so many like medications and stuff were just developed without women of child rearing age, which I guess literally could be like 15 to like 40, were just excluded from these.
Wow. I never realized that. I never knew that.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like most people don't, because, you know, it's like, I guess we look now at like the progress that has been made, but I think just through my own research and through forming Remember the Girls, which I did in 2017, after I learned about all these X-linked conditions and learned that there was all these women across, you know, the world who were suffering and being told that they were just carriers and being not believed by their doctors, and also having to make difficult decisions when it came to having a family, it just kind of clicked in my mind, like, okay, I want to bring all these women together, something that's never been done before. You know, I think the rare disease community can be fragmented sometimes and siloed, you know, within our own rare disease. But it really just clicked in my mind, like, okay, there's power in numbers. And I think we need to create a base of these female carriers, because we're all really fighting for the same thing at the end of the day. And that's kind of to shatter this like glass ceiling of the carrier stigma of being just a carrier. Like, you know, I believe that we are women with X-linked conditions. And right now, I don't believe I really experience symptoms. Like, it's so hard to know, because since there hasn't been a ton of research, it's kind of vague. But over like 80% of ALD carriers eventually do experience symptoms. So that's something that I have to think about. And, you know, I have to think about for the other women in my family.
So would they stay at, like you're saying, carriers will eventually start to experience symptoms. So does that mean you'll just experience symptoms and you won't progressively get worse like your dad did, or you could get like that?
So it is progressive, but in women, in most cases, there's been like, it's really, 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 really uncommon for women to have really like any of the brain issues. They compare the symptoms that women have to the symptoms of AMN, like I mentioned, which is more of like the spinal cord part of the disease. So difficulty walking, bladder and bowel dysfunction, neuropathy. But no, there's definitely a big difference between like the symptoms that women can have and then like the, you know, cerebral version of ALD. But many women, I would say, like, don't have mild symptoms. I don't think being like in a wheelchair is mild, but that's kind of still what we're told, because I guess we're being compared to, you know, men with the like full blown version of the disease, like my dad, and saying like, oh, our symptoms are mild in comparison, which I guess, you know, in comparison, that is true, but that doesn't mean that they don't affect like our quality of life and that, you know, we don't need treatment options and things like that. But it is progressive. And at least in ALD's case, they've shown that in women, age is like the biggest indicator of developing symptoms and progressively them getting worse. But it really is just such a gray area, because some women do get pretty bad symptoms and others don't. And there's like not really a great understanding of why this happens. Like for some women, there has been a lot of research on this, but it's just kind of, we're in the dark. Like I think some researchers say that it's due to something called X inactivation, where random parts of an X chromosome will turn off. So they think some women who have worse symptoms, their good X chromosome has turned parts off and their bad X chromosome with the gene is taking over. But this could be part of the reason, but it's not the full reason. I don't know. It's really complicated, but something down the line that I'd love to do through my organization is just promote and eventually be able to fund like more research on why women with X-linked conditions, some get symptoms and some don't. Because it's just an answer that we just don't have right now.
Yeah, I mean, I know even for my own son condition, Beck with Wiedemann syndrome, they're still relying heavily on just constant research because they really don't know that much. I mean, it was discovered in the 60s. So in terms of X-linked disorders and things like that, through your organization, I'm sure that you've been able to connect with other people and other women that have X-linked disorders. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I have. Pretty much when I started my organization in 2017, I was a freshman in college and I kind of just used what I knew best, which was just social media. And so I made a like private group on Facebook for Remember the Girls. And I pretty much just started doing like cold outreach, I guess, if you want to call it. And, you know, I made like a list of all the X-linked diseases that I can find, which honestly, I still am updating that till this day, because I'll have people reach out to me and be like, oh, I have an X-linked condition and it's not on your website. Like, I'm constantly learning about new X-linked diseases. And I know that there are like over 100 different X-linked diseases. When I started to Remember the Girls, I maybe knew like 15 of them. So always learning. But I started this Facebook support group and just really, I would message like admins of different groups. So I would go to like the Duchenne Muscular Dystrophy Carriers group. And I would message the admin and say, oh, I founded Remember the Girls. This is a group for all carriers of X-linked diseases, et cetera, et cetera. Sometimes I'd get responses, most times not. But I really just use social media as the biggest tool to just start spreading the word. And I think from the beginning, Remember the Girls, I mean, even in the name itself has just always had like a female empowerment type of vibe to it, of course. So that's just always the way like I approached it. It wasn't a, you know, I never wanted to fragment, you know, or say like, oh, this is boys versus girls. Of course it's not. Of course, a lot of female carriers, they have sons, they have fathers, brothers who have been affected by the diseases that we all love. But it was just kind of to be like, you know, remember us, like remember that we're here and that we have symptoms too, hence the name Remember the Girls. We have our Facebook support group, which is super active. We have about 840 members today. So it has grown a lot. Thank you. Yeah. This year, especially, like it's grown by like 107%, I think. So, and I think that just, you know, through a lot of our outreach and social media. But it's just a group for X-linked carriers and females. So it's all women and we have members from all around the world, in so many different countries. And I would say there's about 30 to 40 different X-linked diseases represented in the group. So it has been, honestly, it's been an honor to run the group and day to day, like see women from different X-linked disease backgrounds communicating, because that's just something that's never been done before. Like growing up, I knew ALD. I knew it was a rare disease. I did not know that there was like other rare diseases. Like I never even, you know, I was so in my ALD bubble because that's what I grew up, you know, living. And my family was, you know, had ALD, and I didn't know that there was all these other X-linked diseases or that there was all these other rare diseases. And I think that's, I think something that's easy to kind of, you know, and this was obviously before, like I was, you know, in middle school, so I wasn't like on the internet. I wasn't like, you know, I didn't know that NORD existed or anything like that. I didn't know that there was 7,000 plus rare diseases until really I started going, you know, on social media in high school and becoming more active and being like, whoa, there's this whole community and there's all these other women with X-linked diseases. And why don't I do what the rare disease community does best? And I think that's bringing people from different rare diseases together to use our numbers and our voices all together, because even though our diseases might be different, we really are all fighting for the same kind of things at the end of the day.
That's so true. And that's what Christine and I say all the time. And actually, I'm actually really curious, because with BWS, there's like four different ways that you can get it. And the way that my son got it is not, you know, linked through, it's not an X-linked disorder the way that he got it, but there are some mothers that I've connected with that I've talked to that have the type that's passed down. And I'm pretty sure, I'm going to reach out to them again, but I'm pretty sure it's an X-linked type of situation where the woman carries it. So when I was reading up on your stuff, I'm like, oh my gosh, I need to reach out to the BWS moms that have children through the X-linked way, because I would love to put them in contact with you.
Yeah, I mean, it really, like I said, I'm learning about like all these different X-linked diseases all the time. And yeah, definitely. I'll also look into that. I mean, of course, there are a few different ways, like, you know, you can be a carrier of an autosomal recessive disease like cystic fibrosis, where both parents, you know, have to be carriers. But yeah, I'll definitely look into that too, because I'm always looking to connect more people to remember the girls. And I just
I'm not entirely sure, like, if it would fit the exact criteria for X-linked, but I remember having that conversation where she was basically telling me it had to do with kind of a similar situation. Like I'm pretty sure she got it passed to her by her father, but it was expressed to her child because she had the gene. But I see. So it seemed very similar. But I do also want to touch on, you know, the challenges that women face when they're a carrier of a gene that can be, you know, then expressed to their child, especially with social media. You know, social media is such a powerful tool. And like you said, it allows people to connect from all walks of rare disease life. But it is hard because I feel like there's a really big mental component when it comes to women who know that their child, you know, got this because of it being an X-linked disorder. Can you kind of touch on why, you know, empowering them to not blame themselves is so important?
Yes, definitely. Well, that is such a huge part of our story. Of course, I am not a mother and I can't speak to the experience directly, but there are so many women in our group who have found out that they're carriers, you know, after passing the condition down, or, you know, knew they were carriers, but, you know, ended up passing the condition down to their sons and feel a lot of guilt or shame, and also just mental health difficulties in general. Like, anxiety is definitely really common among our group and among rare disease caregivers in general, honestly, just because it really does become like a job in itself. But the guilt is such a huge factor. We actually have a webinar. We're doing a webinar series next year, and it's open to the public. And our first webinar is going to have some carriers from our group and also mental health professionals. And we will be talking about the guilt and blame that women feel and, you know, how to deal with those feelings. I think it can be easy just to be like, oh, don't blame yourself, it's not your fault. But like, that's so much easier said than done. Like,
yes.
And I also have been doing research lately, specifically like on, you know, different types of female carriers. And I recently saw a study. I can't think of the exact numbers off my head, but it was studying the difference between X-linked carriers. So, you know, women who have a 50% chance of passing the disease down regardless of their partner, and then women who are autosomal recessive carriers, which they're, you know, to pass it down, their partner would also need to be a carrier. And I was finding, you know, in the study that there was so much more guilt for women with X-linked conditions and also blame from their partners that they felt, you know, because they solely passed the condition down. And I think, you know, it's something that it makes genetic conditions like really complicated, because it's like, you know, you probably didn't know that you were a carrier of this condition, as is so common among carriers and rare diseases, but you've passed it down and now you feel like, you know, you're the reason your son's sick. They might feel blame from their partner. It's just really complex, but I think by bringing these women together and, you know, at least being able to talk and talk about like similar experiences, I think it's just such an integral part. You know, I think I can't imagine. I know when my dad was diagnosed with ALD in 2001, like this was pre-internet, way pre-Facebook. My mom always says like she literally went to like the library to like look in books to try to find information about adrenal leukodystrophy. And it's just crazy because, like, you know, now luckily if people get a rare disease diagnosis, they can go online and they can find support groups. But yeah, social media and the internet, I think, has been the most massive game changer. And I think just myself, like being in Generation Z and just growing up, like you know, completely digitally connected, I think has given me a really unique perspective, like on creating and running an organization. And, you know, especially because our organization is international. And I think it just, yeah, given me, like, I feel like I do have unique skills just being a young woman running an organization. And that's part of the reason that Remember the Girls has been able to grow so quickly. But yeah, it's exciting.
Well, and that's not, I mean, gosh, for all you listening out there, that's not where her accomplishments end. She also has published a book, Rare Like Us. Can you tell us a little bit about that, Taylor?
Of course. So I started writing about like my rare disease journey when I was in elementary school. Honestly, I always love to write. I always love to write all kinds of things. I've always been a big journaler, writing down my feelings, you know, writing what happened during the day. And I remember I was in elementary school and I just started writing like about, you know, my family's story with ALD. And it was just a few page thing. And, you know, I had my mom help me edit it. And also my fifth grade teacher helped me edit it. And then she encouraged me to submit it to like a local magazine. And it ended up getting published in the magazine, which was crazy to me at the time because I was like, wow, people actually care about this story. Like people actually, you know, now we're going to see like my dad's face on this magazine and know what ALD is. And through that, we actually connected with a few ALD families like in New Jersey or in Pennsylvania. So I think that was kind of like my first taste of like, well, I wrote down exactly what happened to me and my family and people actually care. So growing up and, you know, in high school, I always kind of knew in the back of my head that eventually I wanted to write like a book about my dad's experience and his journey for a few reasons. One, just I wanted, you know, to memorialize him and to honor like his legacy. And two, I just thought it would be a great way to raise awareness like of rare diseases in general, but also ALD. And with so many rare diseases, you know, getting a diagnosis early is key. And I really think that is such like a massive, you know, part of the reason we spread so much awareness is because people need to know, you know, that if you're experiencing symptoms, I mean, like the, you know, whole zebra symbol, like, you know, yeah. If you're experiencing symptoms, you know, if you're experiencing the hoof beats, you know, it's like you also have to think of zebras, and it might not be a more common disease, but could be a rare disease. So I started just writing the book really, really slowly my first year of college. Whenever I was home, I would have to do a lot of like digging and looking through my mom's like old files. She took like notes of everything and also like interviewing my mom and asking her a lot of questions and other people in my dad's life as well, just to really try to get like the full picture. The first half of the book is actually written from like my mom's perspective. Just because like I was so young, of course, at the time my dad was diagnosed, I was 3. And when he passed away, I was 5. So it's kind of written from like inside my mom's head rather than my own. But then the second half of the book is written from my perspective and focuses on, you know, growing up in a family with genetic disease and how I took the loss of my dad and turned it into something more positive. But yeah, I wrote it really, really slowly. Basically, it took me like 3.5 years. I was like in no rush really. And I definitely wanted to get it all right. But I self-published it in August, 2019. So it's been out for like a year and a half now. And it's been really exciting. You know, I've done a few book readings and I just love, you know, getting comments on like, oh, this part of your book was so funny. Like, you know, when your mom did this or your brother did this or your dad did this, like, I really wanted it to be a story that people outside of the rare disease community could enjoy. Like I really did try to have, you know, funny parts to it. I tried to have real parts to it. Like I didn't want it to just be, I guess, this just sad story about my dad's downfall, but more just like, okay, this is the reality of disease, but you know, our life is still going on. And that is also kind of how I wrapped up the book. Like, okay, this is all sculpted me into who I am. But my journey is still, I guess, at the beginning, just me being 22. And there's a lot that lies ahead of me, both, you know, for my own potential to get symptoms and, you know, what the steps that I'm going to have to take to have a family that doesn't have ALD, but also just developing like as a person and as an advocate. And yeah, that's really the message. But it's called Rare Like Us. You can find it on Amazon, Amazon Prime. But
that's so awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely was a lot of work, but
we're going to link that for everyone in the show notes so people can scroll right to the bottom and get right to it.
Yeah, I think that's so cool. And even like when you're talking about the fact that you are going to have to do IVF and stuff like that is such that's an experience that, you know, might be difficult for you. But the fact that, you know, you've made this platform for yourself and you're able to share that experience once you go through it, if you choose to, that's going to be such a helpful thing for other people to read. Especially if they find themselves in a similar situation, just to know that they're not alone. I think it's really cool. It's really awesome.
Right. Yeah. I'm like an open book. I mean, I feel like me going through IVF will probably not be for like 10 years, honestly, but yeah, I mean, I think, you know, especially with IVF, something I've found like on Instagram and stuff is that most of, you know, women posting about IVF are like having infertility issues. But there's this whole other side of women who use IVF, which is like women who are, you know, carriers or who have a genetic disease. So I think showing that more is really vital. But I think that's, you know, also why our own support group is great, because, you know, women will share their stories. We're also working on like a family planning toolkit right now, which will be like a resource on our website, which will kind of just delve into all the different options for women carriers, and also have testimonial videos from women in our group who have gone through these options. Because I think, you know, you can read about something online as much as you want to, but like actually hearing from a woman who has gone through it and talking about her experience, like the good and bad with IVF, because obviously, you know, any family planning option when you have a genetic disease is not easy. It's also not cheap. So just hearing from other women about their experiences, I think is absolutely vital.
No, I think that you're 100% right. And we can't wait to see kind of what 2021 brings for you and your organization. Before we let you go though, Taylor, you started this really cool challenge where that's basically like name as many diseases as you can. So not only would we like you to tell our listeners where they can find and participate in this challenge, but we would like to challenge you right now to name as many as you can.
Oh my God. Okay. Let me talk about the challenge first. So yeah, I had this idea in my head for a while. It was to start a challenge to name as many rare diseases in under 2 minutes. I think being part of the rare disease community, like, you know, I have met so many people with so many different rare diseases that I've always wondered, like, how many do I really know? And it's kind of funny because like my mom is always like, you're becoming like a, like, by, you know, you're becoming like a geneticist with all these like random diseases that, you know, and I'm like, well, I guess it just comes from being in the community and just knowing about them. But I started this challenge called the 2 Minute Rare Disease Challenge, and you can participate, I would say, by going to my Instagram, which is at Rare Like Her. And through there, you can find a link to my YouTube channel. Mine, I have like a pretty common name, so I feel like if you look Taylor Kane up on YouTube, you might not find me right away, but you can also just look up Taylor Kane rare disease and hopefully you'll find me. But yeah, I would love for anyone to participate. So basically what I want you to do is make a video of yourself and time yourself for 2 minutes, just naming as many rare diseases as you can. It's a lot harder than it looks. I thought I would do way better than I actually did in my YouTube video. But yeah, I thought it was just a fun way to raise awareness and have like a little competitive aspect to it.
Absolutely. We're competitive around here. So let's hear it, Taylor. Okay. TT, you got 2 minutes on the clock?
Let me get it. Hold on.
Oh, I'm stressed.
All right. I'm going to give you a countdown. Ready?
Okay.
3, 2, 1.
Okay, adrenoleukodystrophy, Duchenne muscular dystrophy, Becker muscular dystrophy, Alport syndrome, hemophilia, Menkes disease, Castleman disease, Huntington's disease, complex regional pain syndrome, BWS, chronic granulomatous disease, OTC deficiency, Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, Alagille syndrome. I always start off so strong and then
you got
blue
this.
Cone monochromacy. Myotubular myopathy, Fragile X syndrome. I'm trying to think of all the other like X-linked diseases. Ichthyosis, Tay-Sachs disease, cystic fibrosis, sickle cell disease, spinal muscular atrophy.
Keep going. You got a second wind. I know it.
Oh, gosh. Retinitis pigmentosa.
Um, 30 seconds.
Okay.
you got
Angelman,
it.
Angelman syndrome, Wilson disease, GM1 and GM2, neurofibromatosis, Leishmanian disease, Charcot-Marie-Tooth disease. I don't know if I pronounced that right. Danson disease.
Time.
Okay.
41.
Woo!
Oh! So 41's the number to beat, folks. So get on YouTube. and it's so funny because, you know, I have heard of like three of the ones you mentioned.
I was just going to say that.
They're totally not the ones I would have done. So I know Teresa and I are going to hop on there and get our videos up. And we encourage all of you to do the same. We linked that right down in the show notes for you.
Yeah, well, I think that's what's so cool about it, too, is because like everyone is coming at this with like a different knowledge of certain diseases or like diseases that are similar to the rare disease that like impacts you and your family. Like so many of the ones I named are X-linked diseases just because that's what I know more of. But like, you know, if you're coming at it from a different disease community, like the diseases that you know off the top of your head are going to be totally different. So I think that's like a cool part of like the challenge. So I would love for you to participate.
For sure.
It's fun.
It was awesome. That is super impressive. And seriously, I knew like a few that you named and that really...
I knew BWS and Ehlers-Danlos.
I knew like a couple more and that was it. And I'm like, wow, this just goes to show like... There are so many, and I don't think, other than, like, BWS, I'm pretty sure, Christine, we haven't had, like, a duplicated podcast on
the same
thing.
No, we haven't yet.
That's what she said, yeah.
Yeah, so it's just crazy. Taylor, thank you so much for sharing your story and creating everything that you have. I mean, seriously, I don't really even think you probably realize how amazing you are as a 22-year-old who has done what you have done. I mean, it's incredible. It really is.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Women especially need more people like you in their corner, especially when they're fighting rare diseases and especially, you know, rare diseases that come with that added mental anguish that can come with it, that you're a carrier and, you know, you may or may not pass it to your child. That's incredibly mm-hmm. difficult. So to be able to have you as someone that is there and can actually really understand that because you have that same carrier ability is huge for them.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate all the two of you do for the rare disease community as well. And I love the way that, you know, you use your social media to raise awareness and create content. And I think you're definitely an amazing resource for our community as well. So I appreciate you having me on and giving me the platform to share my story and talk about, you know, my passions with women's health and the rare disease community and of course, X-linked conditions, but definitely something I'm always going to be continuing working on throughout my life because it's so important to me. And I have, you know, some exciting things in 2021. So I would definitely say for anyone who's interested to just follow me on Instagram, follow me on Twitter. It's both at Rare Like Her, just to stay updated on my work and my advocacy.
And you guys can find all of those links right down below in your show notes.
Thank you to all of our listeners who tune in every week, even when we're discussing things that don't necessarily directly relate to them or affect them. We're appreciative of everyone that comes to listen and learn. Learning through other people's stories and experiences is incredibly important when you're trying to bridge the gap between rare disease and the rest of the world.
Until next time, live large and stay rare.
Thanks for listening to the Because We're Strong podcast. To continue the conversation about rare disease and all the unknowns that come with it, don't forget to subscribe and catch us next week for another episode. To learn more about our stories or how to share yours, visit www.findyourrare.com. Feel free to connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We look forward to connecting and bridging the gap between the struggles of the rare disease community and the rest of the world.